It was a failed start for Kyle Gibson on Sunday, but did Gibby still find a way to do an important job for the Cardinals in the game? That's coming up on B-Shave Daily. What's going on, everyone, and welcome in to this edition of B-Shave Daily. Brendan Schaefer here with you in the morning hours of Monday, April 8th, 2024. As Sunday, the Cardinals were unable to secure the series sweep over the Miami Marlins, and the Marlins get their first win of 2024 as they beat up on Gibby and the Cardinals 10-3 at Busch Stadium on Sunday afternoon. That's right. It's still Gibby to me. I know that's going to be a popular comment in the YouTube comment section below this video. Well, you can't call him Gibby because he stunk up the joint yesterday, so he's got to re-earn the name. Or some would say you can't call him that ever anyway because of the implication regarding Bob Gibson. But nevertheless, I'm going to keep doing it. But today on the show, we will talk about Kyle Gibson's failed outing, how in the first inning, he gives up a couple of three-run homers, puts the Cardinals down 6-0 before they even come to the plate for the first time, and effectively took the Cardinals out of the game in the very first inning. It was a loss in this game because of Kyle Gibson's failure in the first inning. And then, separating from that thought, I think we can talk about how Kyle Gibson still did an important job for the Cardinals yesterday in what he was able to do, getting through a 6-inning outing and saving the bullpen and kind of grinding through and pitching pretty well at that point, too, by the way. He only gave up one run the rest of the game. And again, I don't want anybody to hear something that I'm not saying. Kyle Gibson failed at his job yesterday because we talked a lot about last season starting pitchers for this team who gave up a bunch of runs in the first inning and sort of took the bats out of it before the game really got underway, and how that is a kind of a mental slog to put your offense through to say, hey, I know the game just started, but you've got to score 7 runs today or we're not going to win. And then, of course, it becomes more than that after the bullpen comes in. But the Cardinals use Ryan Fernandez and John King for the remainder of this game, and they don't burn any of their necessary, useful leverage relievers in a losing effort because of what Gibby was able to do after that first inning collapse. So we'll talk about that on the show today, and we'll take a look ahead to the Philadelphia series that begins on Monday at Busch Stadium. And we'll look at the bats as well. Like I said, I think it's difficult for an offense to, and this was a big topic that we talked about a lot last year, difficult for an offense to find its way back into a game like yesterday's with the way that it started. And I know a lot of people say, look, they're big league players. It's incumbent upon them to figure out a way to grind through and maybe make a game of it. And sometimes that will happen, you know, but most of the time it won't be a realistic endeavor to spot the other side 6 runs and come back and make a game of it. It's just a really difficult thing. How many games this season have the Cardinals scored more than 6 runs? Once, I think, so far. It's just not a very common occurrence. And then to combine that sort of offensive production, which we do know the Cardinals are going to need more games like that this year, I think, with the pitching staff that they've built. Again, middle of the rotation would be serviceable, and that would be all right for the Cardinals. But the other side of that coin has to be better offensive production. But with where the lineup is right now, and they haven't had a bunch of those really breakout games just yet, it's just unlikely that it's going to line up to have one of those days on the same day that your starting pitcher spots the other side 6. And Gibson just didn't look great in the first inning. He gave up some hard contact, obviously. He put guys on base so that hard contact ended up being a lot more damaging. 2 3-run home runs in the same inning is rough. It's rough. And talked about in his first start the notion of kind of pitching to the score. Maybe he was just pitching to the score in the series. Cardinals had won the series, so we're just pitching to the score. No, I tease. It's not what you wanted. It's not a great sign because you want to find this team to have that killer instinct, I think, this year. You win 2 out of 3, which the Cardinals have done now 2 series in a row. They did it in San Diego, and they do it over the Marlins this weekend coming back to St. Louis. So that's a positive. They're still sitting here at 5-5. They're in the mix. They just need to kind of stay in this zone, I think, in the early portion of the season, kind of get their legs under them, and then hopefully see the offense start to come to life as the weather warms up But at the same time, you know, I think for this team to get where it wants to go, they are going to have to take advantage even more so of some of the bad teams. And winning 2 out of 3 is great, but the Miami Marlins hadn't won a game until you let them do it. So there was an opportunity to sweep here. And I do think as the season evolves, there are going to be series where you don't play as well. And maybe you lose 2 of 3 or 3 of 4, like we saw against Los Angeles. And you want to be able to make up for those series by getting the sweeps that you were on the doorstep of being able to pick up. And this is 2 series in a row where the Cardinals were not quite able to slam the door on a series, and they lose the finale in San Diego and then the one here in St. Louis on Sunday. So it's early, and you'll hear me say that a lot as long as the Cardinals are in the mix. If they're starting to really fall out of it, then very quickly I think it does become more difficult to talk about how it's early. If you're right in the mix, but you're playing 500 baseball and you haven't quite taken that next step to hit another gear, I think you can live with that for the time being. If you're way below 500, I think those criticisms of the Cardinal offseason that a lot of folks in the fan base have levied toward the organization, those would start to become validated pretty quickly if the Cardinals should fall out of, you know, range of a 500 record. And then we could say, well, it's only April. Well, it's only May. Yeah, but we played that game last year, and I think it falls on deaf ears a little bit this time if they don't at least kind of keep a near 500 pace, which they're doing right now. But to get to where they really want to go and gear up for a playoff run, you want to see them get above 500. And in the opportunities that they've had to do so, they've played some good baseball over the past week or so in San Diego and then back in St. Louis over the weekend. But not being able to close out either of those series is a little bit disappointing. The game on Wednesday was a game the offense just didn't do much, but they got pretty good pitching. I think that was the Zach Thompson game where he didn't look great, but the numbers he put up, 5 innings of 3 earned runs, kept him in the game. And then the bullpen really held it there and gave the offense a chance, but the offense didn't pick up the mantle in that way. Yesterday, I just don't think there was much the offense was going to be able to do in that game on Sunday after Gibby gave it up the way that he did. But we should talk about it. We should talk about getting through 6 innings and allowing the Cardinals and Ollie Marmol to have to turn only to Ryan Fernandez and John King, one of whom is probably, you know, not on the roster in a couple of days from now, potentially, depending on what happens with the Sonny Gray news, as he's going to make that start tomorrow. And then who does he trade spots with, basically? He's going to come off the injured list, and somebody's going to have to go to Memphis. And it will have to be a pitcher to keep the 13 pitchers and 13 position players aligned, which is a rule that you have to have on the 26-man roster. So for those who would say, well, why don't they send down a position player? Well, you can't do that. That's not within the scope of the rules of how rosters are set up in this day and age. But John King, you know, could be someone that goes. And then we'll see with Zach Thompson. Ollie Marmol said that they're not going to use Thompson out of the bullpen. They're going to stay away from him prior to Tuesday. Is that an example of he's just going to be the piggyback for an obviously limited Sonny Gray, with Gray scheduled to go just about 65 pitches in that game on Tuesday against Philly? So because of that, it would be good to have somebody who's built up behind Gray, because as we can sit here and go, well, 65 pitches, that's about 4 innings. Maybe he could get through 5. That's if everything goes well and he doesn't have some rust to shake off and he's efficient. And I don't think that's going to be a guarantee on Tuesday for Sonny. So you could look at a spot where if he throws 27 pitches in the first inning, whether he gives up any runs or not, that's going to really eat into how deep Sonny's going to be able to go on those 65 pitches. I would say 5 innings would be the maximum, because he did 4 up-downs in the simulated game on Wednesday in Springfield. So I don't think they would stretch him much beyond just kind of adding 1 inning per outing. So I think they'd let him get through 5. But if he's not as efficient, let's say he goes 3, or you're in the middle of the 4th inning with 1 out in the 4th and you've got to make a move, I think they won't hesitate, provided he's healthy, to go ahead and put Zach Thompson out there and have him take you deep and carry some innings. Today on Monday, Cardinals taking on the Phillies. It's going to be Miles Michaelis against Spencer Turnbull tonight at Busch Stadium, 6:45, first pitch. It's going to be important for the Cardinals, I think, to be competitive in this one. And if Michaelis can give him a solid outing, I think they won't hesitate to throw meaningful arms at the bullpen and try and get a win in this one, knowing that you can look at it a couple of different ways. Tuesday, you can look at it and say, well, we've got our ace on the mound, so if we can be real aggressive in winning this first game, we should be able to get some good effort from him on Tuesday to maybe win another one. Or you can look at it from maybe the glass half empty perspective of Sonny can only go 65 pitches, and that might mean three innings, four innings, if the efficiency is not hyper-focused for him. And so that might be a tougher game for you to win, unless you have some faith in Zach Thompson to give you, you know, if Sonny goes four and Zach Thompson goes four, I don't think that's a terrible plan for the way to handle Tuesday's game. Maybe Zach Thompson gets you to that seventh inning, and depending on how deep Miles goes today, you're aware of how many leverage-based relievers you have to be able to fill in the gaps on Tuesday, and you can maybe be more aggressive and not ask as much of Zach Thompson in a bulk fashion Tuesday. But this is all assuming that Zach Thompson can go. And we talked after Wednesday's game about the velocity declining for him down to 87 miles per hour in the last inning of his start. I don't know if he's fully healthy. It's been a lot of talk about the mechanics that aren't synced up for him, and that's something that Ollie said is going to be an ongoing process. It's not that he's going to suddenly be able to have it fixed and he's right back to throwing 95 in his next game. Ollie talked about it this week and said that's not a realistic expectation for the way that this is going to go. So he's working through some things right now, but is that going to ultimately manifest itself in a sort of physical limitation that the Cardinals decide that they need to, you know, take action on? I don't know that this is the case or isn't. It's just a continuation from what we talked about earlier in the week, looking at his outing and going, doesn't this guy usually throw 94, 95? And he's throwing 90, 91, which is tapering off to 87, 88 in the later innings of an outing. So is everything going okay here? It remains to be seen there with Zach. My hope for the Cardinals would be that he's fine, is just working through some mechanical issues, and that he'll be available to throw three or four innings behind Sonny Gray on Tuesday, and that can allow the Cardinals to be really aggressive Monday. And, you know, everybody from Gallegos to Romero to Kittredge to Helsley, all hands on deck with the leverage guys, could be available if the Cardinals can get five and a third or six innings out of Michaelis. They can really be aggressive in using their best relievers to try to hold a lead tonight after none of them had to pitch yesterday, despite, you know, your starter gives up six runs in the first inning, and you look at that and think, man, this could really set the tone for the rest of the homestand if you have to burn Fernandez for a couple and John King for a couple, but that only gets you to the sixth inning because Kyle Gibson got blown up and only went three. Yesterday was a really prime example of, and I know this is going to sound ridiculous and it's going to be a point of contention and probably frustration for some Cardinals fans, but yesterday was a very good example of what the Cardinals were looking for when they went out and got Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn in the offseason. They wanted veterans that have been around the block and that can kind of find their way through a game when they get punched in the mouth in the first inning. And they know the benefit for the team in the long run because of having done this before and having been around the block to know what it looks like and what it feels like to have an outing not go your way, but to still go out and grind through six innings for your team. The Cardinals didn't really have that type of rotation last year. You know, Jack Flaherty would be able to do that at times, but not every time. He had outings where it would go off the rails and he wouldn't really find it back. Certainly Adam Wainwright is an example of that. And it's not that he wasn't a veteran. Obviously, he was a veteran at the time. But he was injured and he literally just had no stuff. He just had nothing left. And so I think the characterization of, and we've heard the Cardinals kind of hint at this and I've pushed back on it, but the characterization that last year's team and their rotation in particular was so young and inexperienced and they had to lean on younger players and guys who, you know, didn't know their way around, that's a little bit of a mischaracterization. But if you just look at each of the individual players that we're talking about, you can explain why the Cardinals felt they wanted to get some certainty for the back of their rotation that they didn't have last year. They didn't have it. Like, I'm not disputing that. They didn't have the certainty in the guys who were gamers to be able to go six every time, even if they didn't have very good stuff and they got beat up early on in the game. They didn't have the guys necessarily that were going to rebound and get them through. Wainwright was one of those guys, not because he's not a gamer, but because the tank was literally empty on his career. And that had a downstream effect on the bullpen. Jack Flaherty was another guy who just, when he was on, it was fine, but consistency was not a strong suit for him last year. But that's really what we're talking about for the most part. Steven Matz would have been another example, and he would do it sometimes. He would give up five or six and then get him through five innings. But, you know, he was having too many of those games, too, where he would give up the runs early. And so it wasn't always going to be the case that he would be able to save the bullpen the way that Gibson did. Yeah, I mean, to give up six in the first and still finish six innings is pretty impressive. It's not impressive in the way that, oh, he's a great pitcher, give him the Cy Young for giving up seven runs. It's not what we're saying. But I think you will notice the impact in the way that this series plays out. As long as the Cardinals are competitive against Philadelphia, you'll notice the impact of who's available, and it will be thanks to Kyle Gibson as a result of him just being able to get through those innings yesterday. The Cardinals wanted to say, oh, we had young guys last year. They couldn't do it. We got to go get Gibson and Lynn, guys who can kind of take the ball and eat those innings, even if it's not going to look great in the line score. And where I push back is that, well, no, it was really like Wainwright, Flaherty. And then when you got to after the deadline, and sometimes I think Mozeliak, when he says, well, last year we just relied on all these young guys. No, like you traded away 40% of your rotation. Like Montgomery was the type that could eat some innings. And Jack Flaherty, for as much as I think he was inconsistent, he wasn't a terrible pitcher. That's 40% of your rotation that you traded away. And then you're relying on Dakota Hudson and Drew Rahm and, you know, different guys that you notice aren't on the team anymore. Casey Lawrence and Andrew Suarez and just all the guys that they called up and they just had to use them. You know, Zach Thompson was part of that group and is still young enough and hopefully with enough promise that they feel he can take the steps forward to become a reliable guy. Matthew Liberatore was part of that as well, but they've now moved him into a role where I think he's more suited to success. So that's really what it was about last year. I just get a little bit nitpicky about, well, we're such a young team. The Cardinals are a young team, position player-wise. They've got a lot of young players. I mean, they're starting three rookies effectively. Jordan Walker's not a rookie anymore, but Mason Winn, obviously, I mean, Herrera is played sparingly, but he's a young guy. Victor Scott, Nolan Gorman, Brendan Donovan, Lars Nootbaar when he gets back. And I mentioned Walker. Like, that is a young core, which is an exciting thing, by the way. Like, you can be excited about that, I think, as Cardinals fans. But they looked at that and said, all right, we had some guys that at the end of the year, sure, you can say you were playing guys like Irving Lopez and Yuniel Kirikuto and, like, sure, young guys. But those guys weren't on the team if last year's team was competitive. That's why I'm like, okay, maybe not so much on the young guys thing. And I also think a lot of the young guys that you say you brought in the veteran leadership to maybe help out, that maybe is a little bit of a cop-out too, because I think a lot of those guys are part of the leadership of this team. Like Brendan Donovan's a leader on this team. Lars Nootbaar, I certainly think, is a guy coming into his own as a leader on this team. Obviously, Goldie and Arenado, and you've got Carpenter back, and they brought the guys into the rotation. I just think a lot of what got compared to when they were in the offseason this year saying we needed to get these veterans, guys who have been around the block, I think they were comparing it a little bit to what happened at the end of last season when it was Dakota Hudson and Drew Rahm and different guys. But that's, you weren't relying on those guys. You're like, we don't have to use that as the cop-out for why your season went bad. Your season went bad because of guys like Wainwright who were veterans, just you banked on and it didn't work out. And then you didn't backfill in a way that was reliable behind that. And then it was even more difficult when you traded away the other 40%, like the competent 40% of your rotation. At that point, sure, you can paint any sort of narrative that you're down for the count behind the eight ball with the guys that are coming in. But like that was a little bit by design too. But they recognized the way they didn't want the bottom to drop out of their rotation this year, and by extension, their bullpen, because they wanted guys who could take the ball and go deep, even if they run into trouble along the way. And so Kyle Gibson did that yesterday. It's not that he deserves a Medal of Honor, but I do think that it's notable that he was able to make it happen. And now we're going to watch and see how the Philly series plays out in a way that the bullpen's not going to be stressed and strained. You do need to be willing to go to this bullpen and have them succeed in the roles and thrive and bring home a win if it's a 5-4 score late in the game on Monday or a tie game, and then the offense is going to have to take some onus on itself to do what it wasn't quite able to do on Wednesday and take advantage if the pitching staff can keep this one right in range for them to find a way to make it happen. The Philly lineup, Phillies are 4-5 to start the season. Turnbull has got no ERA, I think just maybe one game, 7 strikeouts. He pitched well in a five inning. I think he went five and didn't give up a run his first appearance of the season. But even though Philly's 4-5, they've got obviously a lineup with some pretty capable hitters: Castellanos, Bryce Harper, Realmuto, Kyle Schwarber. I mean, you'll have to deal with, you know, Trey Turner, the usual suspects in this lineup for that first five or six. You got Alec Bohm. I mean, behind that, their bottom of the lineup is a little leaner, but I think that was kind of what we saw with the Marlins this week as well. But can the Cardinals just find a way to grind out a series against a team that I think is kind of in a similar spot to where the Cardinals are? If I had to guess a win total for both teams, it would be kind of in that low 80s range right now. And what's gonna be able to put this Cardinal team over the top over the midweek series against the Phillies at Busch? Hopefully something that Kyle Gibson did on Sunday can play a role in that, by him getting deep enough into the game that you didn't have to use any of your leverage guys and waste them in a game that was obviously pretty much over before it started. That's sort of the takeaway for me. You can have multiple thoughts at once about the way Sunday's game went. You can be disappointed that they didn't kind of step on the throats of the Marlins when they were vulnerable and in a spot that you could take advantage. You can be a little bit, you know, irritated with the offensive performance. 9 strikeouts throughout the lineup. Good day by Nolan Gorman. The home run that he hit was in and out of the glove of Jazz Chisholm, though, in center field. That was a little bit fun to watch because I thought he was going to get a beat on that and be able to keep it in the glove. Couldn't do so. But he had a couple of hits. Walker had a base hit. Arenado went 1-for-3. And then Michael Ciani, good for him. Was nice to see in the ninth inning him come in and hit that triple down the left field line. It was funny to see, too, and I don't know how many people were still watching at this point. You had the rain delay at Busch. I lucked out missing the rain delay game yesterday since I wasn't there covering it. But a lot of times when you see that ball down the third baseline, it sort of tails toward the stands and it caroms off the sidewall there. So if you're the left fielder, you can, I always say, try to anticipate that and run to where the ball is going to be. You don't have to sprint toward that sidewall. It's going to carom off that wall like 90% of the time. So run to where the ball is going to be. Try to anticipate that a little bit. And then as you're running toward that area, you can get a feel for where the ball is actually going and hone in on it, maybe make a play at second base on a guy. Probably not on a guy like Ciani because of his speed, but that might even be more of a reason to say, I got to try to anticipate this if I'm going to have any chance of not giving up the double. But then the ball did not curve and hit the sidewall. It went into the left field corner, and the left fielder had to retrack, and it ended up being a triple for Michael Ciani. So that was cool to see for a guy that was 0-for-6 coming into the game and ends up scoring his first run of the season as well, as the Cardinals got a little bit going there in the ninth inning for a couple runs after the rain delay. But the game was what it was. They lose it 10-3. Offensively, just not a lot of punch. 5 hits total, couple of walks as well. You had the big swing by Gorman, but otherwise just not really much going on for the Cardinals in this one offensively. They didn't do much with runners in scoring position because they just didn't have guys on base. One for four, with runners in scoring position. 3 left on base by the team, as Max Meyer certainly did his job. We talk about Kyle Gibson failed in his endeavor, but he did his job later on in the game. Max Meyer just flat out did his job, was able to hold the Cardinals down to just that one home run by Nolan Gorman there in the fifth inning, and he goes 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 3 strikeouts, and a walk. I like seeing that for Max Meyer because the Marlins, and look, if you're a fan of Skip Schumacher, which we can talk to about the news that came out yesterday that the Marlins have voided the club option for 2025 on Skip Schumacher's deal, which could signal that they're going to go in another direction after this season, especially if things keep going the way that they're going now. But I don't know that that would be specifically them blaming Schumacher for the failings. I think it's just kind of a new group, a new front office that Kim Ng, remember, they had her, and she ended up leaving of her own volition, if I recall correctly, because they were trying to hire a president of baseball operations over top of her in the job that she did to build that playoff team last year. And so I think there was some stuff going on behind the scenes where they might just have a new front office group in there that's going to want maybe to get their own manager. Or they also recognize, like, I wouldn't be surprised if it were this, because you look at it and go, uh-oh, bad news for Schumacher. The other side of this is the guy won manager of the year with the Marlins, historically one of the most difficult organizations to thrive with just because of how they're run over the course of time. And Schumacher might feel just fine about the idea that he can be a free agent manager after this season and perhaps fill an opening with an organization that has a better chance to spend some money and win and support him. Like, I feel like it's not the worst thing in the world for Schumacher to have shown how good of a manager he is and then possibly have maybe his, I'm not saying he's going to be just the most highly sought after candidate, but I think people highly respect the job that he does in that role. So I think it could be a case where not that it was mutual, but that if they say, hey, we're going to avoid the club option, Skip says, yeah, I can kind of see the direction of things. And that's maybe not the worst thing in the world for his career path as well. And maybe he has some opportunities to step into a more lucrative opportunity or a job that you feel a little bit better about than your future for. Because with the Marlins, man, like their lineup is not, I don't know. Like they, I was looking at it on Saturday at Busch, and you like Arias, but he's really a one-tool player. He's not a great fielder and doesn't bring a lot of power to the table. Jake Berger's a nice piece. Jazz Chisholm's a good player. Josh Bell is okay, but he's, you know, getting up there a little bit in age. And then beyond that, like Jesus Sanchez, I just don't know if he's going to be a difference maker. Brian De La Cruz, I'm not sure if he's a difference maker. Tim Anderson on maybe the wrong, the back end of his career and the skills declined a little bit. So you look at their lineup and the way they're set up, and I'm not super crazy about it 1-9. And then you look at their pitching, and I would be crazy about that rotation, but they just can't get guys healthy. Max Meyer is finally healthy again, but Yuri Perez goes on the injured list this year for the Tommy John surgery, and it's going to be probably 2 years before we see him back to full strength. And it just seems to always be the case with the young starting pitching that the Marlins have. Edward Cabrera's been on and off the injured list, and you know they haven't been able to rely upon him in terms of a guy who has all the bright future in the world, but then you look up and is just not available for them. So I'm just not so sure about the direction. Sixto Sanchez was another guy who was injured. You know, Jesus Luzardo is a really good one, but just keep him healthy. Like, that's just the case for all these guys. So I just look at that Marlins team and know that historically they don't like to spend big on their payroll. And I know Cardinals fans complain about how little the Cardinals spend when they're still, you know, $180 million. It's not as much as some teams, but you could look at the other end of that spectrum and go, my goodness, it would be very difficult to be contending with that type of payroll. So I don't know. I think maybe not the worst thing in the world for Schumacher if that ends up being the case, that they voided his club option and he can perhaps get into a better situation if he's going to be a sought-after candidate after this year. Let me know, Cardinals fans, what you think about that and what you think about, too, the Kyle Gibson effort from yesterday. Didn't go well. He failed in his first job, but then I think he did his job after that, being able to get through six innings, and now we wait. Now we see if the benefits end up coming to the Cardinals over the next 3 days against Philadelphia, because if you're able to use Helsley and Gallegos and Romero and Kittredge in two of the three games this week before the off day on Thursday, I think that ends up being a big benefit to the team and maybe the reason that the Cardinals are able to win a couple of these games. I think you're looking to take the series anytime you go out, especially against a like team, a similar team that's going to be maybe vying for that wild card in the National League. There's three wild card spots, and you could be in that 83-84 win total range. Perhaps the Pirates just take off and never look back, and the Cardinals aren't able to get to, you know, 92 wins, and Pittsburgh wins the division. Like, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if that ends up being the case, you could be looking in that 84 win range as a very valuable opportunity to make a wild card. And the Phillies are going to be one of those teams, I think, in that range as well. So let me know what you think, Cardinals fans, about the disappointing loss for the Cardinals on Sunday, but everything else that went into that, whether it's the offense kind of falling flat, whether it's Kyle Gibson, like that can end up being a trend to give up all those runs in the first inning. But do you give him some credit as well for saving the bullpen the way that he was able to go out and throw another five innings of one total run and get his team through six? And what do you think about the Skip Schumacher stuff? I think that's a little bit interesting as well. I know Cardinals fans fond of the job that he did as a coach here and that he did in his first year as a manager there for Miami. But what do you think about the club option being voided for him in 2025? News that happened over the winter but was only reported, for the first time yesterday. That's all. That's all we got for this edition of B-Shaped Daily. Make sure you hit that subscribe button in the lower right-hand corner of your screen, and we'll continue to break down Cardinal baseball all this week and season right here on the B-Shaped Daily podcast, which you can also find on Spotify and then here on YouTube as well. That's going to do it, though, for this edition of the show. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on B-Shaped Daily. Peace.